This is Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
As we were talking about before, you know, as we head to the stretch run of the NBA regular season into the playoffs, yeah, every team has got a little bit of an obstacle here or there, some question marks here or there. Brooklyn's got a lot. They are currently the eighth seed, but there's so many things in that team that they're dealing with and coming to grips with. It's good to focus on them, and Alex Schiffer joins us from The Athletic to talk Brooklyn Nets on a progressive guest line. How are you, Alex?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm great. All right, from the standpoint of, before we get into the details of the Nets, explain in best terms that you can, what is keeping Kyrie Irving off the court at the Barclays Center? From the city standpoint, from the building standpoint, what is his current situation?
I mean, at his most basic level, it said he's not vaccinated, and that the city mandates allow him in the building, but not the ability to perform, quote unquote, in the building. That is about as simple as I can get. I took one poli sci course in college. I guess I should have taken more. And at its most fundamental level, that's what's going on.
So has there any been any progress on, clearly he's not going to get vaccinated, but has there been any progress on lifting that mandate so that he can play come April in the postseason?
I mean, I guess it depends on how you define progress. I mean, his ability to be in the building is the result of one of the mandates being rolled back, but the private sector mandate is the one keeping him off the court.
Got it. Okay.
So because the first mandate was rolled back, you could argue that there is hope that the second one gets rolled back at some point. But when that is, and if it's in time for the Nets playoff run, given, as you mentioned earlier, the situation they're in, that's kind of the – I would argue the Nets season and how far they can go in the playoff hinges on the mandate.
So you see, you can see how this is playing in like Peoria here, right? Like it just, like to the average person, it just doesn't seem to make sense. And it doesn't seem to make sense scientifically that he can be in the building, but he can't play in the building. It doesn't seem scientific. Is there another reason why that is in place?
I mean, obviously it wasn't just made for him. It was made for the city's private sector employees, and there's a lot of them. So I don't understand the science of it either, of the difference of him, who by the way, has already had it, being in the building and playing in the building and how it impacts the spread of the virus. If there is a difference, that's above me when it comes to the science. But no, that I don't think there's anything else there in terms of any other layers to that. But I mean, it obviously the city laid off over 1,000 employees last month who refused to get vaccinated in the private sector, and so obviously the rule wasn't made for him, and it doesn't only apply to him, but he has certainly been the most public display of its bizarreness, I guess is the word to use.
All right, so let's get to the basketball. How is this team when he is on the court, and how is this team when he is not on the court?
Yeah, I mean, I think almost if you could change players, you know, the bigger the guy that moves the needle more about being on off the court is Kevin Durant. You know, this season changed, I mean, in a matter of weeks where in December, you know, they get the COVID outbreak. They had, I think, as many as 10 or 11 guys in protocols at one point. Then Kyrie comes back part-time. Then Kevin sprains his MCL. And really, nothing's been those 2 to 3 weeks completely changed the course of the season. They tanked in the standings. So, I mean, when he's not on the court and Kevin Durant's on the court, there is a huge burden on Kevin Durant to get them to win, as you saw Sunday with him scoring 53 points in 43 minutes against the Knicks, who are on the verge of the play-in but are probably going to be looking at a lottery pick or the back end of one. And now, you know, they have both Kevin and Kyrie tonight in Orlando, where I'm coming at you from, and that's a team that's at the bottom of the standings in the East. You know, they should be able to make easy work of them, but, I mean, do you only throw Kyrie Irving out there because Kevin Durant could use a break? I don't know. So, I think, in short, when they have Kyrie and Kevin out there, the role players that are built to kind of play off the looks they get from these guys getting doubled, the offense can flow. They have multiple weapons. And when it's just Kevin, you are banking on him having a good game, which he tends to have more of than not. But if those role guys who have an increased burden with Kyrie out too, if they aren't hitting shots, it's just more of a burden for Kevin. I mean, Kevin had half their points on Sunday. That just kind of speaks to the burden he has to carry without Kyrie out there.
When is the timetable for Ben Simmons? Is it a wait and see, or do they have a target date? And when he is on the court, what do they think they'll get from him?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there is a timetable, to be honest with you, and that's kind of the most concerning thing. You know, I figured that this game, the one I'm at tonight, would be the one that he makes his debut for, because it's after that Philly game, Orlando's at the bottom of the East. Like I said, you know, there's a lot of – it seemed like a natural game to maybe give him some run without a lot of pressure, and now there's no return in sight. So he's not practicing yet. He isn't even doing one-on-one work. So, I mean, I think I don't have reporting to back this up, but common sense could argue that there's a chance we don't see him for the rest of the regular season. And, I mean, obviously what they get when he's out there, I mean, he's an elite defender. He can push the ball in transition. He's another ball handler to move Kyrie off the ball. Obviously the shooting isn't there, but his ability to get to the rim and playmake is very – appetizes them as well. So he brings a lot to the table that can definitely take them up a notch.
Alex, and we're talking to Alex Schiffer of The Athletic on the Brooklyn Nets. So let's just, for the sake of argument, say there is no lifting. Kyrie doesn't play at home in the postseason. This is still a really good basketball team that, through the circumstances that you mentioned, Kevin Durant being out, Kyrie playing on the road only, and this is a team that may start at the bottom of the tier of the playoffs. And we know the postseason is adjustments and adjustments. Given that, how dangerous is this team as a 7 or 8 seed to those at the top of the standings?
I think they're dangerous. I also think it depends upon how the standings shake out. You know, if the Nets are the 8, if the standings hold as is and the Nets are the 8 seed, you know, they would not have Kyrie in Toronto for that play-in if Toronto holds the 7. They would not have – there's a chance they might not have Ben Simmons with the way this has gone. It would be the Kevin Durant show up there. I mean, if they were to get the 8th seed, I think it'd be a very tough matchup against Miami in the first round.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking Bam Adebayo, Jimmy Butler, Kyle Lowry, three guys that have experience in the postseason. Victor Oladipo coming back for them, I think, isn't being talked about enough as an underrated weapon. They have P.J. Tucker, a guy kind of signed to be like the Kevin Durant stopper or, you know, get up on him. And I just think that'd be a very tough matchup for the Nets in the first round. If they're the 2nd, if they're the 7 and they have Philly, who still is figuring things out just like they are, or maybe Chicago gets back up there. I mean, they're all so close. I think there's a world in which they knock them off and maybe can get a bit of traction. But, I mean, I just think at its core – you have a team that doesn't have a lot of continuity together, assuming Ben Simmons does play, having to go through the top 3 seeds to make the finals. And as I said, Miami has continuity and chemistry, been there before. The Bucks, the Nets don't really have that. So I think that there's a run in them, but do I see that run going all the way to June? It's tough to get me to wrap my brain around that right now with the way things are.
We asked this to our Philly guy about the trade. I'll ask you basically the same question. What was your thoughts when it happened? What have been the benefits to Brooklyn, and what are you still looking at in terms of how not just Ben Simmons, who has yet to play, but the other players that came in the package?
Yeah, I mean, talking to people around the league, I think everyone said to me that both teams got about as good of a deal as they could ask given the circumstances. When it went down, I was still shocked it was going down, not from what I was being told, but just like, man, I just did a James Harden trade a year ago. I can't believe round 2 came this quick.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Seth Curry, you know, Patty Mills has been very overworked because of some of the things we've touched on. Seth Curry gives them another shooter out there, especially with Joe Harris out for the year. They've been bad on the boards all year. Andre Drummond has helped fix some of that. And then those draft picks, I'll be very curious to see what they do with those. I mean, getting them back was gigantic given everything they gave up to get James Harden in the first place. And I'll be very interested to kind of see what they do with those picks. Do they even use them? Are they packaging a trade in the offseason? I don't know. But I mean, obviously, the crown jewel being Ben Simmons, and he's yet to play. Long-term, it could still be beneficial for them. But, I mean, Kevin Durant's 33, and you don't really get to waste a year of his prime right now. And to me, as long as he's not, as Ben's not playing, and if he doesn't join them for the postseason, then it year one of the trade results were a flop in a sense.
Alex, great stuff. Really appreciate your time. I know this is kind of an interesting team. There's so many different dynamics to it rather than just X's and O's. Thanks for helping us break it down.
It's Weed and Start the Fire by Billy Joel. Every week there's something else, man. I'm sure you'll be having me on in a few weeks for something else.
You got it, brother. Stay tuned. We'll get you back on, my friend. Thank you so much, as always.
Take care, man. Thank you for having me.
You got it. Alex Schiffer of The Athletic on the Brooklyn Nets, who he said, like, it's like if we had, like, seriously, if we had, like, a Miami Heat guy, right, they would be like, well, what about Bam? And what about Butler? And how's Eric Spoelstra doing defensively? Like, it would be all basketball. Like, there is a layer to this team, when you think about this season, that has nothing to do with basketball. It has everything to do with politics. It has everything to do with, like, disgruntled player that had to get out of there, right? It has to do with a superstar player missing a lot of the season that has put this team behind in its playoff aspirations. And the fact that strategically, if you want to get into that, strategically, this is a team that is going to go into the postseason with one of its star players in games and not in games, and rotating back and forth on that, which on the one hand seems like, well, again, you're talking about teams that have to make adjustments to Kyrie playing and then Kyrie not playing. But that seems easier to do than Steve Nash adjusting with Kyrie, without Kyrie on his roster. So it's really interesting. If indeed somehow, some way, and you kind of heard him say it, this is not just a Kyrie rule, right? This is a rule that's in place for all public sector employees in this city that you have to be vaccinated to work in the public buildings. And so if that doesn't get waived, or if that doesn't allow Kyrie Irving to play at the Barclays Center, it could be too big of a mountain for them to climb against a Miami Heat team that routinely beats them. Like, every time they play, Miami seems to just routinely beat them. And Miami's very good. Like I've said many times, the thing about the Heat, and you gotta watch this, is Eric Spoelstra, he's done it for years, he'll make you work. And that's one of the reasons why they can get some success in the playoffs. Because a hard-working team in the postseason that's led by a good, strong mind, they're a tough out. They're very difficult. They'll take you down 6-7 games. And they may not have the horses quite enough to get there, but you kind of saw it in the bubble. I know, completely different circumstances, but Miami forced those teams to play their way, and they got themselves to the NBA Finals. All right, it's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio, and again on Twitter, @TonyDRadio, @RonCulver, that's Ron with two N's. We continue.